excited to have you. We're super excited to have you. I wanted to talk about a few things with you tonight, but first I want to ask you to introduce yourself and to our listeners and how you are related to us in this podcast.
My name is Tyron Perry. I am related to this podcast because I was on an episode of Family Matters called The Party.
An amazing episode. Go ahead, John.
If I remember correctly, because I watched the episode some time ago, you were Shirley on The Party.
Shirley, yes.
How did that come about? Now, was it simply because you just happened to be related to Jamie Foxworth, or was it?
Oh no,
it
I had to audition like everybody else. I mean, I had been on the set more than a few times to take Jamie when she was going. For a little bit, my mom was on tour. She was a background singer. So when she was on tour, I would take her to the set, pick up my sister. I was like, I had already graduated and stuff, so I was cool. And then the audition came up. My agent told my mom about it. I went and did that. And then the casting directors had no idea. So they were like, we heard that you're related. And I'm like, yes, I have to audition like everybody else. I did not care. Like, I was like, that's fine.
So I apologize. I have two questions in one right now. So one, who was your mom a background singer for? And also the name Tyron Perry, is that a stage name? Is that your actual birth name?
Tyron Perry is my actual name.
Wow.
Yep. I was named after my father. My mom and my dad were high school sweethearts, and so they planned me, talked about it before, you know, and she named me Tyron because his name is Tyrone, so she wanted to mix up the letters a little bit, and that's how I got my name. And my middle name is from a French lady that my mom saw as a little girl when she was in Germany, so my middle name is Charmaine. So she heard that name when she was like, I think, a teenager, preteen, and she was like, I'm going to name my daughter that one day, and so middle name.
Wow.
And then your other question was, who did my mom sing backup for? She sang backup for, let's see, I'm go down the list. When she first got to California, well, we were in Kansas still. So Eddie Murphy, she did backgrounds on his album, his very first one. That was like around the time that I was asking to come to California. And then she did backgrounds for Elle DeBarge, Shantae Moore. Oh my gosh, she did like... Phil Perry and Chaka Khan. So she was on tour a lot. She would do different stuff a lot.
Were you able to ever get a chance to meet anybody that she sung background for?
Yes. Elle DeBarge is a very good family friend. And Shantae Moore is my mom's really good friend. And a little small fun fact is that they had a duo together before Shantae went and did her solo album. So they were singing together. And they had done demos and stuff. So I met them. One of my mom's best friends used to sing backup for Michael Jackson. So we actually went to one of his concerts. My daughter was just asking me last night if I have any footage of it. And I'm like, this was like the 80s. There's no, you want those big tank cameras? No. So we actually went to see the show. And I guess in that concert that he was, that tour, he was using kids on the stage at the end for one of his songs. And so because, you know, they were friends, he was like, you should bring the girls backstage. You know, they can, and we hung out backstage. We played with the monkey. We played with Bubbles. And they were like, we're going to take you guys on the stage. Michael's going to come out and he's going to dance with you guys. And Michael Jackson was on the side and he said, well, those three look alike. And they were like, well, no, they're sisters. And he was like, okay, put them on the fan. And so we were on the fan and we're like, oh, we're going to just dance on the fan. This is cool. Michael Jackson. And halfway through the song, he comes over to the fan and stands right in between us and we're dancing. I remember looking over going, okay, just keep dancing. Just keep dancing. So he was literally like dancing with us, but I was like, this is my subject. So yeah, we got to meet a few of the people.
One, it was that moment where you got the performing bug. And I also wanted to know, like, what was Michael Jackson like? Did you get a chance to talk to him, get a real feel for his personality? Like, I'm just wondering about all of this.
Well, the acting bug was way before. Like, that's when we lived in Kansas and my mom had come to California to do background vocals with her same best friend. So they went and did background vocals. She came back and I had been saying to her, I was like, I grew up watching like Starsky and Hutch, the Dukes of Hazzard, Wonder Woman, all of them. And I was absorbed in that world. I was just like, I need that for myself. And I told my mom, she says that I came to her and said I wanted to be in the TV because I was so young that I thought people were actually in it. And I never left that. So once we moved to Kansas and she was going to California, she was like, you know what? We might as well just move there. That's what she wants to do. I'm getting hired doing sessions, so we might as well do it. And everybody was like, no, that's not smart. You have three kids, your husband, you can't, no. And she was like, we're doing it. And I'm glad she was like, don't care if you think it's too scary. She's like, we're doing it. So when we went out, we came out here. It didn't take too long. She took us around to agents. We were on the, back then it was the RTD bus, not Metro. But she took us to different agents on the bus. Back then you didn't really need headshots at first. You could take pictures off your camera, develop it, go take it. And that's how I started. That is when everything happened. And I did, my first job was a movie, Trancers. I was an extra. My mom was also an extra on that. And then I went and started doing sitcoms and stuff. My next thing that I booked after the Trancers movie, the extra role, was the girlfriend of Gary Coleman on Different Strokes. So from there, I just kept doing different auditions. And then my other sisters would go on auditions. My middle sister has done voiceovers a ton. She also did a old 80s or early 90s Steve Harvey show. So we've all been, yeah, she was in that as well. She also did the Michael Jackson story back in when they had it on ABC. It was a miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
She was on that. And then...
what did she play?
It was this scene where, I think it was Michael. I vaguely remember it was Michael and his brothers, but there was a bunch of girls who wanted to go up to the hotel and they had like a few words with them. And then there was other screaming girls. She was in that group of girls where they were like hitting on them and stuff, you know, the groupies. but yeah, she did that. And she also sang on Michael Jackson's album on the song They Don't Really Care About Us. So she was doing a lot of stuff and still does. So we all just were kind of in it. It's like, music for one is our, well, especially we all say it, but I say it, it's my life. Like that, my whole entire life could be a soundtrack. I could pick different artists and just tell the story through music. So it's kind of like a part of who I am. And then acting is just like the cherry on top. So
I wonder, I'm curious about what your time in Kansas was like, especially as a person of color. I wonder if that was different because of that, or was it just kind of another day in the life of a child, or what was that like?
For me, Kansas, I joke with my mom about this all the time. I was like, if you decided to not go to California, I would have ended up being a cowgirl. And she was like, absolutely. I was like 7, 8, and I have like a picture of me in elementary school. I had cowboy boots on with this really 80s poofy dress. So I knew how to, what do we do? Square dancing all the time. I didn't have a problem with it. I would not live there now, but I do like the country. That's just how I am. I live in the city. My plan is one day to have myself a country house with a mini farm. That is the dream. That was my grandparents' life. So I'm like, I want that. But it was fun. It was fun. We weren't there very well. I was a kid. I don't know how long we were there, so I can't really say, because you know how you're at an old house and you think you have a ginormous backyard, which I did. And then you go back and you see it and you're like, that, you can't even play Foursquare on that. But for me, I was just like, ooh. So I don't even want to say, like, it was like this big field. But to me, it felt like a big field. And then before that, I lived in Germany, which is where my sister was born. And going to school in Kansas, great. It was on an army base, so it wasn't really too bad. I had a bully, but everybody has bullies. I was the weirdo nerd girl who had pigtails that were long, and it's Kansas. So they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is just my hair. So, okay. Germany was great. I remember that. That was not as fun. And it was only one incident. Like the whole overall Germany is beautiful. The people are really, really kind. I had one teacher who's not very nice, and really weird story, but she ended up tying me to my chair in front of the entire classroom with a jump rope that was in the toy box. And I sat there in front of the class while they were laughing at me, crying my eyes out. And I went home and I told my mom, because there's no way you're getting away with that. So I told, and my mom came the next day and walked into the classroom and said, you outside right now. And the entire class went silent. She had her words with her, and she's like, and now you'll go back in there. Since you embarrassed my child in front of the class, you will apologize to her in front of the class. She came in, and in front of the class, she had to apologize to me. And I sat there like, don't do that.
What led to the teacher doing that to you?
Story of my life. I can be nice to a fault. And one of my classmates forgot her pencil and we needed it because we were doing exercises. So I let her, she said she only needed to finish whatever was on her paper. I gave it to her and said, okay, but that was my only pencil and I was responsible. So she finishes it and the teacher's like, okay, everybody go to your seat. We're getting ready to go to the next page or whatever. And I am like, okay, I need my pencil back. And she was like, no, I'm not giving it back. And I'm nerd girl. I love my classwork. I love my homework. I love all of it. So I'm like, no, 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 no. I need my pencil. And I had to go over to her. So I'm at her desk and she's like, I'm not giving it to you. And the teacher looks at me and she goes, Tyron, I said, everybody go to their seats. And I was like, okay, but she has my pencil and I need it to use on my worksheet. I let her use my pencil. And she was like, I don't care. Go to your seat. And I looked at the girl and I was like, I need my pencil. And because I said that and didn't just go to my seat, she was like, I told you, go to your seat. So since you don't want to listen, went to the toy box, got out our jump rope, dragged a chair to the front and said, get in the chair. And then tied me up in front of the whole entire classroom and said, since you can't stay in your seat, I'll show you how to stay in your seat. Tied me up and left me there in front of the students in the classroom.
Was that teacher ever reported or fired or any consequence?
Oh,
or
my, I don't know what the consequence was. My mom came in there and embarrassed her and then went to whoever her superior was and told them. So I'm pretty sure something did happen, but I don't think it was that much because it was a different time period, if you know what I mean. So it was like, we might, but it's like, she has to toughen up. I don't know what they said. But I don't really remember anything else about that teacher. But like I said, that one incident is the only thing that was negative about Germany. Everything else was great.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I think the closest I could sort of relate to that terrible experience, my parents who immigrated to this country from Haiti, I mean, they had teachers back in the 60s, 70s who would just put a whip on you if you were writing with your left hand instead of your right hand. And funny enough, I'm left-handed. So it's just like this just big difference of like, oh, I'm in this country where I'm encouraged to be whoever I am. And then you have rules in maybe other countries or other sets of schools where it's just, you got to subscribe to this. And if you don't, we're going to do something awfully inhumane to you. And it's just awful.
Crazy. That is, it is. That's like, I mean, people are born left-handed, so.
Yeah, you can't change that. Andrew, are you left-handed or right-handed? I can't remember.
I'm right-handed. I've never been able to write with my left. I'm just like sitting here in shock, y'all. Like, oh my God, these things happened.
Yeah,
they do. They do. But like I said, this is a big classroom. I always say it. So we're here to learn. I learned how to not be a horrible human from experiencing what horrible humans are.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, when you were on Hollywood sets in Hollywood doing a lot of things with acting and getting to know people and building connections, what was that like when you ran into extreme negativity?
For the most part, I think the most negativity I would sometimes get would be at auditions. And the reason why I say sometimes is because I'm not one of those actors. I'm not going to sit in the waiting area and prepare myself in front of other people. It's just not how I roll. So I usually disappear. If that's what I'm going to do, you won't find me. Like, I know where I am on the list. You won't find me. And now it's a lot easier because we do a lot of stuff online. So you don't really have to worry about that. But it was competition at auditions, and some people handle the way they handle competition is a lot different than, say, you would or I would, but it's there. I don't care about it on the set. The only thing I can say is, and that's from me being a series regular on the show Bustin' Loose and being a guest star on other shows, I just had it in my head because there is kind of a hierarchy on the set sometimes, and sometimes extras are treated badly. I'll say sometimes because a lot of people do understand how they can be mistreated on sets and they do the opposite, which I appreciate. But from watching that when I was there on sets with people, I just knew this not. I get it. I get the work that we do, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to do that. So for the most part, people kind of, I stay to myself. If I had any issues with anyone, I stay even more to myself because if I don't jump into it, there can be nothing. So I would say if there were a negative situation, I literally would go to my dressing room. Like when I was, like when I was a series regular, I had something like negative happen, but I was what, 16, and I left the classroom because I was like, I'm not going to sit here and deal with it. I'll go to my dressing room because you don't have to, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm blessed in the sense that I didn't have to deal with a lot of onset drama for my the stuff that I was doing. I'm sorry if that's loud. I don't know what that was.
You're good. No, you're good. Okay. I was going to ask if your experience on the party episode of Family Matters, if there was anything of similar tension or negativity there. Like, what were your memories of that experience? Maybe it was a positive experience. I don't know.
The party was a positive experience. I didn't, you know, any negativity I felt on the set, I was not working as a cast member on the set or an extra on the set. So my experience doing that episode was fun. There, you know, I knew Darius, I knew Kelly, I knew all of them. So it was like we had already hung out on the set before because I'd be there. Mm-hmm. So it was like hanging out, but you have to memorize lines and you have to do whatever, but it was great. Outside of that, most of the castmates were fine. And I'm pretty sure there were some experiences for Jamie that being the older sister, I'm going to feel some type of way about it. Mm-hmm. But I did keep Jamie in the trailer because I'm like, no, it seems like if every time you go out, something's happening, then just you tell me what you want, I'll go get it. And you can stay in hand and you don't have to be bothered. So.
And I wonder, way before she eventually got dismissed from the show in season four, if there was any discussion of maybe amongst you and Jamie, maybe amongst parents, like, oh, this is too much. Let's just get out of here. Let's try to find a way out of our contract. Was that ever an option or?
No, it was. Jamie loved doing the show. So okay. She loved doing the show. Like being on the set, doing the episodes, being with Jo Marie and Reggie. All fun for Jamie. All of that was fun. The other stuff was the bullying and the other stuff that has nothing to do with the show. She's not going to quit over that because if that's your love and you're on the set and I love what I do, I just don't like that. Then there was no, you know, but like everybody knows, there was not any inkling of any of that. Like that was upcoming that she was not going to be on the show anymore. There was no hint. There was no clue given. It was just very abrupt. Very abrupt. And there was a lot of stuff that happened before that. And I would rather Jamie tell all of that. But me being on the set with that kind of stuff that was happening, with the stuff that I saw, that we just kept our mouths shut and didn't say anything because we got other stuff to do. Like, I'm not going to sit here and just dwell on it. But if you're going to bring it up, somebody else is going to bring it up and they're not going to bring up what actually happened. And we could have spilled the bean years ago when people were talking about her being off the show. We could have told the stuff that was going on before it happened. We could have told how not just us, but other people that are a part of the show had issues. There were always issues. So you can say, oh, it's because of this and it was because of that. And no, she's a kid. They know what they hired. They're not going to hire a kid who can't act for a major show. They believed in her. They hired her. So you can say it was, oh, well, she's not. You can scream on set, act, you can't act. That's fine. She got the job for a reason. And it wasn't because she was just cute. Like, she was feisty as hell on that show.
And I want to actually ask, Andrew and I were both curious about the audition process for Jamie, because I know she was selected out of 10,000 girls for the role of Judy, but there was a different Judy in the pilot episode. So how do we go from that to Jamie? Like, how did that transition happen?
We don't know the ins and outs of it. We just know all I know, because it wasn't my audition, was that when the agent let my mom know about the show, she was like, they are recasting for the show. It's already been picked up and you have to go audition, but it's like a big role. That's all I knew about it. I don't know how they did the audition process with my sister. I don't remember it being something was really long drawn out process, but I do think she had to go to maybe two or three auditions, callbacks, because there were so many other girls, because they were looking at girls and trying to get the right one. So it's like, it didn't drop in her lap because she smiled. She had to go in and perform.
When y'all found out that she officially got the role, was that a very big highlight for the family or just Jamie?
Yes, it was. We were all excited. I remember just screaming. Like me and my other sister, we were just screaming like, yeah, because you know, Jamie was we were always very protective of her. She was just tiny and funny all the time. So we knew she was going to be great, but it was like, yes, we were very, very happy for her to have something that was her own, that she could do for her, you know, that she could be like, this is what I'm doing. So it's like the house is all creative anyway. So we're always supporting each other like that. Mm-hmm.
With all of you being in the entertainment industry, being artists and being creative, how is that as a family where all of you are auditioning for different things? Were there times where you didn't really get to see each other? Like, how did that work in the family dynamic?
Sometimes we would have auditions for different things at different times, at like the same time. So we'd go straight from, especially when I was out of high school, because I would drive myself to auditions. My mom would take my sisters to their auditions. So there would be times, but not for very long. Like, unless, like, it was me when I left to go to Vegas to do a show out there, I was gone for a while. So I didn't see them until I would come back, like, on my days off and I drive out. But other than that, all of us being in the industry was fun. Like, booking, if we book stuff around the same time and we're all working, we're like, yeah, we're all working. It's good. And like, even my middle sister now, like, she's creative. She's coming up with projects because she's like, I want to put all of you guys in it. Put both of you in there. We'll do something because we'll just create it, because that's what we did when we were kids. I've talked to them about it already and I'll probably end up putting it out, but I have like my thing. My thing was, I used to like to write like little mini scripts for us, because my mom, single mom, she's like, you're not going to be hanging out outside like that. Very protective. So we'd be inside, bored. So we're like, okay, so I'm going to write this script. You're going to be this role. You're going to be this role. And I'd write it out. Sometimes I would write out two scripts with, you know, because no typewriter. And then I'd give it to them. And I'd be like, so you're that character, you're that one. So you read it, give you like 10 minutes, and then we're going to like practice it. Like, it was our own little production thing in the room. And then if we weren't doing that, we had a radio show. There wasn't really a radio show. It was just me recording songs from the radio. And then after that song and hit record again, and we're talking in the room like we're on the radio. And then I'd go back to the radio and record another song. So I have those cassette tapes, but I have one of our home movies. It was my first like play on another movie, because I'm a very big Batman fan. So it was back when Jack Nicholson was out there. So I'm like, so I need to create another version. So I'm a black man, but it's not the black man that came out later. It's something completely different. And my sister, my sister was black man. My middle sister was black man. And me and Jamie were like the culprits. But there was like three different scenarios where we were different culprits, like different people that she had to come in. But there's nothing serious about it. It's really funny, but in a good, bad way. So I was telling them, I'm like, I have it. I think we should post it up one day. And she's like, okay, maybe. So I'm trying to get both of them. I'm trying to get both of them on board, because the fact is we had her in all black, but we didn't have a cape. So I cut open a Glade trash bag and I taped it to the back of my jacket.
All right. I like that.
So when I tell you, that is why I'm like, we should probably just put this out, because it's really, really funny. But it's funny in like a bad way, where you're like, what is on your head? Like, why are you guys pretending to be drug users? And we have coke, but it's baby powder. And we're just like,
yeah, I love that. I think something that I've observed, like you and your sisters, Jania and Jamie, coming up together, being in the show business, is that there always has seemed to be this collaborative, supportive spirit. Like, sometimes, you know, if siblings are in the same field, there could be this, you know, competitiveness, this sort of rivalry. Yeah. But it seems like all the time you guys have always just been like, yeah, let's root for each other.
Yeah, always, always. I mean, there's no reason to compete with each other. Like, we lived in the same person for 9 months. We all came from the same place. We all are going to have some variation of the gifts that our parents gave to us. And so, yeah, it was always supportive. And then, like I said, we were constantly together. So people would come over to see my mom and hang out, and we'd have a 5-minute show ready where we sang like two or three songs for people. And then we'd leave, or I'd do like a little script thingy and they'd act it out in front of the company. So we were always doing stuff together. Fast forward, like I said, my middle sister now, she went to film school. Jania went to film school. She did her own short film. She's working on other projects with me. I still write scripts. I have a bunch of them that I've been sitting on for a few years that I said, this year's not the year that I'm going to keep sitting on them. So I'm going to deal with those. But there's projects that we're working on. And of course, like me and my sister talk about, we might be like the weigh-ins, because we're like, hey, we got this going on up. And that's what you do, because that's how it works. Competition is not going to do it for what? What are you going to compete for? Like, there's always going to be a slot open. You're just going to compete for the rest of your life. You'll never have rest. How are you going to rest in your performance if everything's
good? Yeah, I agree.
Wow, I definitely agree with that too. Now, any of your new projects that you have coming up, I'm just being nosy, do they involve music?
Yes.
Can we ask what kind? One of them.
Well, I have like a song that I did, and I'm probably just going to put that song out because I did have a problem with like freaking out about putting out my own stuff on my own. So I would hold on to it and not do anything. Same thing with my scripts. I'm done with that. It's just going to go out. You like it, you like it, you don't, you don't. Like, what? It's, I'm not going to die. So I'm going to put the song out and see what happens. Right now I'm mixing it, but I'm going to go and have it mastered elsewhere. But learning to mix my own music was interesting, but I'm glad I did. I'm glad I did. Cause then I don't have to be dependent, you know?
Now, what part of that did you find interesting the most? And I'm asking because I know you've done music in the past. Yeah. And then you did music for the soundtrack for The Real Ghostbusters, which I love. I thought it was an amazing animation. So
yeah, that was a fun album to make. I had my first album when I was 15. Mm-hmm. So that one was on Columbia Records and we did really good. And there was supposed to be a second album that was coming out, but the record label and my producer at the time, they had a falling out, and because the contract was under him, they didn't want to. But that's what I came home from school and that was the phone call, and they're like, we just wanted to let you know we have to let you go, didn't want to, but our hands are kind of tied. So from there I was doing like demos for different music artists that were out. I did a couple of songs that were supposed to be done on Selena, but she passed away before she could actually record them. Yeah. So that was really sad. And I loved Selena. So I was like very happy to do like some tracks for her to actually listen to. But I also did like the We Can't Be Friends with, why can't I think of her name right now? You know the song? We Can't Be Friends. Deborah Cox. Boom.
Oh.
Yes. So I did the demo version of that, and they did not take my background vocals off because Deborah Cox said, leave them on there. And I say, thank you, Deborah. Because now every time I hear that song, you can hear me in the background singing with Montel Jordan.
Do you mind singing just a little bit of it just so I can jog my memory or no? I don't want to put you on the spot.
There's a helicopter going by. So as soon as it goes by and I don't hear that. We can't be friends. We can't be friends. That's the chorus, but it has harmony. So that's the middle note and it stays the same. So it's kind of the boring note, but it works. You know how my.
Has anybody told you that you have like a very gospel angelic quality to your voice? Maybe you've heard that before, but I just, yeah.
I grew up singing in church.
There you go.
That's where, yeah. I sang in the church choir for years. It's music. It's like, and my mom sings and we all sing, and music is medicine for me. So me singing, I literally, you know how when you're in church and they're like, oh, your voice is anointed. There's medicine in it. Mm. And so for me, I know what my gift is for. I know what that's for because I've been in situations where I don't feel good. But if I sing, I feel much better. Like I had an ex who would be like, every time we get into a fight, you go into that room and you have a concert and sing a bunch of songs. And I don't understand why you do that. And I'm like, would you like for me to stay upset? I'm doing the mini concert because I don't have to feel it anymore. It will heal all of that. That's why. And he was like, it's weird. And I'm like, I don't know.
Can I ask what that relationship between gospel music and secular music was like for you? Because I don't know. I feel like there are, you know, some people who grew up singing in a church that may do their best to stay away from it. There are others that are trying to get into it.
You get told by certain people in church, ooh, you doing that secular music now, you know, that gift came from God. It needs to stay in his house.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, but if the voice is supposed to help people heal or break down things that they might be holding on to, and all of us are in this house, do we need it more than they do out there?
Good question.
Do you? Because I feel like you go where the healing needs to be. You already know where to go. Some people don't know where to go. Some people need to be led and talked to
by my voice.
It's all I'm saying.
Now, do you have a go-to healing song when you have something happen? Like, just an example for myself, I will put on Calvin Harris and blast it as loud as I can if I'm having a terrible day. Do you have like a go-to artist or song?
Bjork.
Really? What song?
Oh, there's a lot. I will go through two. There's two different albums, and I will tell you what they are. There's two different albums that I will go to from her. I will do the Selma songs and Homogenic, those two albums. So from Homogenic, there is I think it's Joga. It's the song about her son. And then right after that, there's Unravel. Those ones, this like especially
Wow.
I was like in a like a little like my mom doesn't understand it either. She was like, well, you love Bjork. And I'm like, yes, I do. And she's like, no. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with Bjork. But she's like, but Tyra, and her vocals are like limited. And I'm like, but she's trying to be nice. And I'm like, but do you hear the soul in her voice? She sings with every cell of her body. It may not be the right note, but if she sings it, I'm not crying because the note was wrong. I'm crying because it came from a place in her gut that she didn't have to expose to me. So I appreciate that because I'm not getting the show. Whitney Houston is another one of my favorites. So.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I was literally about to say that. I was like, I'm gonna be stereotypically black and say that Whitney always gets me to a place, especially Greatest Love of All. Like when I heard that for the first time in the biopic movie that came out. Keep in mind I'm in Vermont, so there's not much color out here. I was just in the theater with my very white wife, and I was in church. Right. So yeah.
Awesome. No, that song is amazing. Me and my sisters used to sing that together. My mom wanted us to sing that, the three of us together. So, that's the other album I did. I did an album with my sisters. But that came after the Columbia deal. I was doing some more demos because, like I said, I was doing demos a lot. Like, and I would do them quickly, so it was like I could do more jobs because I don't like staying in the studio a long time. I'm getting there. I want to sing it. Peace out. And that's it. So I ended up working with this one woman who was like, oh my gosh, do you have any friends that sing? Do you know anybody else that sings? I'm trying to put together a group. And I'm like, I have two sisters. And she was like, that's perfect. Bring them in. It was for Shaq's label. And that's how our She album came about. And then after that, Jania was working on some of her solo music. Jamie was working on, I forget whatever, I think she was working on her book. And I ended up joining a, well, putting together a metal band with my friend.
Wow. How's that energy with being in metal music? I mean, it seems like it would be a much more, throaty endeavor.
No, see,
No?
the thing is I don't talk about it. Yes, I grew up in church and I'm a metalhead also. You can't pinpoint me in one box, but I was listening to that stuff since junior high, like ninth grade, seventh, eighth. And I always loved it. And my voice, most people will be like, but you sound like you sing in church. And I'm like, what does that mean? And they're like, but that doesn't work. And I'm like, to you, because I sing metal songs in my house all the time and it sounds good to me. So I'm like, we're gonna try this and see what happens. And you know what? It matched because I played guitar, my other friend in the band played guitar, and then we had a bass player. And one of my really good friends was the drummer. So we like grooves and stuff. So it wasn't like it was going to be like there was still some groove underneath because I am a black woman. I need my bass. I need the groove. So it ended up being a really good mix. And I didn't water myself down. I was still doing runs when I felt like it. And I would still do metal. I'm not like we ended up disbanding, but I'm not like opposed to it. I would still do it. I will do. That's why I said I'm putting out one song first. Because if I put out an EP, people are going to be like, wait a minute, but she did this song over here. And this other one doesn't sound like that one because I am not a box. I need to do stuff. Like, I love classical music. I love metal. I love classical music. That's why I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Apocalyptica. They're one of my favorites.
Yes. What is it?
It's a band, a metal band, but they play classical music, like their metal is like classical music. They're violinists and just like there's violins and guitars and everything. And then they'll have guest vocalists from different bands come in. It's awesome. So that when I first heard that, I was like, that's great. So I listen to a lot of soundtrack composers because I love those. I love what is his name? I don't want to mispronounce his name, but he's the one that did all the music for Game of Thrones. Him, Max Richter. I went to a Max Richter concert and I cried on three different songs. And I'm like, girl, what are you doing? But because it was like, I felt that in my house, but then when I'm there and it's like the live piano with him playing and then the strings of it, I was a mess. I was crying in there. I was like, this is the best night ever. My ears are so happy. It was great.
Yeah.
So for me.
Yeah. I've heard, I mean, you know, I've heard about like, you know, Harry Potter soundtrack orchestra concerts that give people that same moving experience. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous. Like it is. And that's one of the things, like that's one of my secret like things that I want to do, because everybody knows I've done the pop, I've done the R&B, I've done the metal. But one of my secret things is to do vocals with like someone who composes like Max Richter or someone who has that, like to the point where on my Instagram page, because I can't call up Max Richter and go, will you play so I could sing with you? I literally just played the song in my living room one day and I just sang, made something off the top of my head and sang with it. And it was so fun. And I'm like, one day I will do that. Even if it's just one song, like I said, I don't want to be in a box. So I might come out with an EP and then it'll be a mix and mash of stuff. And like I said, if people love it, okay. If they don't, okay.
That's awesome. Can I ask about the She Show podcast? I was listening to that, you know, in preparation to talk to you. Yeah. So it's a great podcast that you've done with your sisters, Jania and Jamie. And you guys talk about everything, life, love. I mean, you took me back with talking about the social distancing just days into the pandemic. You talked about the Black Lives Matter movement. Ironically, that episode came out the day that I first met my wife almost 4 years ago, June 7, 2020. So I was like, oh, that's, yeah. And ironically, I did a Black Lives Matter interview on the radio like the day before. So it was like, it was all.
That's so cool. It all came together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, you have the Bully on the Set episode, which I appreciate you guys for having, you know, for, you know, speaking your truth. And I was emotionally exhausted along with you. So tell me about how that podcast is along and why aren't there more new episodes? I'd love to hear that.
Okay. I'll talk about the first one first and then we'll get to that. Okay. I know. So we had been, like you had said earlier, we do a lot of things together. There's no competition. So we are sitting there and we're like, you know what? We will go to our mom's house and we will have full on conversations, but we're like laughing hysterically the whole time. And then we'll go into another mood where we're like, introspective. But, and you know, my sister was like, why don't we just do this for a podcast? Just talk about what we want to talk about. Cause that's typically what we do all the time anyway. And then we, of course, crack jokes on each other. Because you can't, like, we don't pick on each other or compete, but we will clown each other because you have to. Mm-hmm. And we have a weird sense of humor. So people tend to like it, which makes us happy because we, like we said, we have a weird sense of humor. But yeah.
Can I ask anything that might have went too far in terms of clowning and pranking? Like anything on the podcast where you were like off the air, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that?
No. No, because we kind of know already. Like, we'll look at each other. We'll be like, if we're going down the road, we'll be like, where are you going with that? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Or Jamie will be like, if she does this, she means I'm not talking. And she'll literally do that. I'm not talking. Nope. And we'll be like, okay,
good. Can I ask if that happened on the Bully on the Set episode? Since that was a very intense topic to talk about, was it like, oh God, I don't know.
That one, we that needed to happen. So we just went with whatever was there because I honestly didn't expect Jamie to break down, but I knew why she did. It's just a lot of stuff had been pent up anyway. So it wasn't, there was no stopping that. Just that stuff is not supposed to stay stuck in you anyway. So it was better that she let it out, say her piece, and we can move on.
And was there a sense of feeling like you're fulfilled, you said your piece and you truly moved on, or were there still moments in the last 3 years where it's like, oh God, we have to address this again? And
yeah, there was definitely that, because she's like, I don't, like, she wanted to say her side of it and I don't think she would have cared. She would have just let it go if that other interview that got really huge that Jaleel did and he brought her into it and made it look like it was her fault. And we're sitting here like, here we go again. So yeah. And she of course was like, why do I have to like keep fighting for my like own side of the story. And it's like, you don't, you can just say whatever you want to say, or don't, you don't have to address. She's like, no, I'd rather just address it. And then it was like, Vice wanted to say something. So it's like, can we, this is it. Like, we want to talk about it. And then when Jamie's ready to tell the rest, if she wants to, then she's going to tell that in the way that she wants to, whether that be a book or something else. But the podcast, we don't really stop ourselves. We kind of like talk about what topics we want to discuss beforehand. And a lot of times that's where it gets funky or funny, because I'll be like, oh, I want to talk about this. And they're like, boring.
Wait, can you give us an example? Like, what topic did your other sisters find boring that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I'm a hippie, kind of, in a way, when it comes to holistic stuff. So I was like, why don't I talk about like natural herbs and like stuff like that, and like how you can take care of your health, and like how everybody should have a detox 2 times a year, a heavy metal detox 2x a year, because it makes it healthy, and that way we could stop Alzheimer's. No, boring.
Well, Andrew, you're a vegan. Is there any truth to all that in your life, or what?
Well, I can say from my own experience, cutting out meat and all that stuff for years now, I have felt way healthier, way better. Milk was one of my vices that I don't like. Cow juice, because it just is so weird cows. To me. We're not cows, and we shouldn't be drinking it. And I'm like, ugh. And once I finally cut that stuff out, I feel like a whole different person. And I do at least a detox.
Yeah, you should. Everybody, look, and I'm not going to get into too much detail, but I like to take care of my health, and I have every year I'll check up and see, because we regenerate. But if you're feeding yourself the same stuff, your cells are going to regenerate at a slower pace. You don't want that to happen. So I was like, I'm going to detox, because I wasn't feeling right. And the doctor that I went to was like, well, you have parasites. Now, if you go to a regular doctor, they're not going to tell you you have parasites. If you go in there and say, I think I have parasites, they're going to look at you like you're crazy. And it looked for you to say anything else, and they're going to be like, something's wrong with this person. We got to get them out of here. But if you go to holistic doctors, they know all about it and they can check. And so she did put me on a protocol, and I was in shock at the experience, to the point where I was like, no, they will not, I will not let this happen again. Like, once you're killed, I had die-off symptoms, which is like Herzheimer or something, the Herzheimer effect or whatever it's called. And I blew up. And I was like, what is going on? It was my liver. Because when you're detoxing, your liver, my liver got sluggish. It was like, that's too much toxins in here. You need to help me. So I had to drink like tea, dandelion root, a lot to clear out my liver so that it had some help. But after that, I was like, I'm not doing this. And anybody that I could help, I really think they should know about it. First of all, if you have parasites, you have heavy metals, because their bodies consist of it. So that's why I was like, let people know. Because it's like, literally blend some blueberries, some, what is it, kale, and other stuff in a blender and drink it, and that will naturally take out the metal, but we don't do it. So they were like, yeah, but no, we don't want to talk about that one.
And actually, that speaks to my next question. Do you get resistance from, you know, other people in the Black community about this? Because, you know, unfortunately, we have this reputation of eating kind of unhealthy.
Well, I stopped eating meat for a while. I only ended up eating it again because I got really sluggish, but I won't eat like red meat. Chicken, I'll eat occasionally. I can't eat all the time, because, you know, if you don't eat meats, but if you do eat it, you get sick, because your body kind of forgets how to digest the meat. You can get really sick, like bad cramps, really bad. So, I feel like, I don't even know how I want to say it, but eating healthy, I'm trying not to think about the chicken now, but eating healthy for me was something that was really important.
I'm hungry. Do not make me think about chicken right now. My God.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not thinking about it, but cheese was really hard to get rid of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was. And then I found like vegan cheeses, and I was like, because some of them are, and some of them don't melt when you're trying to make, like, they don't melt, they gel. And then I found like the cream cheese by, I think it's Miyoki's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Kitchen. And the butter, her butter's great. The vegan butter. Oh, man, it's so good. And then my best friend just told me last week, she's like, I think they changed their recipe for the butter because it doesn't taste the same. I'm like, don't tell me that. But she has the best vegan butter. I was doing a lot of intermittent fasting and eating only the Dr. Sebi list of foods to eat. So it was a lot because I was trying to detox. But I like eating healthy. It's just, I've been eating some chicken.
and I don't blame you. Chicken is chicken. You still got to answer my question about the She Show podcast. Why are there no more new episodes? You guys left me on Jeffrey. You guys left me on Jeffrey Dahmer, and then like, where are we at right now?
Okay, so we did record. I believe it's two episodes. They haven't been edited yet. The reason why, and we were not, and we're going to get into the subject, but the reason why Janine had a lot of personal stuff come up that she had to take care of, and in between raising my niece and all the stuff that she's taking care of, we just couldn't get a time set for us to all sit down and do it. Because we tried to do an episode where we were like on the phone, like with each other. And we're like, well, we can't be with each other. So let's try it on the phone. And then Janine listens. She's like, that sounds terrible. She's like, I don't even know if we should put it out. I'm like, I keep getting DMs that people are ready for the next episode. So maybe just put it out. And if it sounds terrible, it sounds terrible. She's like, I'll try to fix it. So we're going to have it out. I'm glad you asked this because I'm going to go see Jania after I'm done. So I'll be like, we need to do some more episodes.
Yeah.
Right now it's just scheduling.
The scheduling. Yeah, it comes down to the scheduling. God, I want to. So you were in a few episodes of Different Strokes, correct?
Yes.
How was that experience? I've heard mixed experiences about what working with Gary Coleman is like. What was your perspective on working on that show and working with Gary?
I was 11 when I went on that show, and there was supposed to be a kiss on the cheek, but he saw me and he said, I want a French kiss. And they changed it because he's Gary Coleman. And my mom read it and she was like, oh no, they have you. It's a French kiss. No, what is going on? And I'm like, a French kiss. I'm like, I've never kissed anybody. I'm not kissing nobody. So I'm like, this is no. And so my mom calls the agent and she's like, we're not doing this kissing scene. I don't know. And I, you know, they were, my mom told them, she's like, she didn't, she said, I kissed anybody. She is 11. She's not kissing anybody. So then my agent calls my mom and goes, you gotta just let her do what's in the script. She's like, but she'll lose the job. And she goes, then let her lose the job then. And I was like, I guess, cause I'm not kissing it. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, the producers want to talk to you, Tyron. So you and your mom have to come down to the producer's office. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm not thinking anything of it. I get in there and the man is like, hi, very nice. He made me feel very comfortable. He's like, so I hear there's a French kiss in there. And I was like, yes. And I've never kissed a boy, so I can kiss him on the cheek, but I don't know what that is. And he's laughing and he goes, it's fine. He's like, you don't have to French kiss him. You could go back to your dressing room. And I was like, yes.
Wow.
It wasn't really. And after that, there was no problems. Gary wasn't, he wasn't rude to me. Like he wasn't what I've heard the experience was like for other people. He wasn't like that. Like everybody was pretty chill. And then it was cool because when I wasn't working on Different Strokes, when we were on our break, it was like the guys would go out and play basketball and I'd be like, there was all of these different the sets from different shows. So me and Alyssa Milano would sit out and talk while the guys were playing basketball from Silver Spoons, and Alfonso Ribeiro was there. We all were just, it was a really cool experience. Mm-hmm. It was very, very cool.
I mean, what were you and Alyssa talking about? I just want to get into that. I want to be a fly on the wall.
We were talking about the hair on my arms.
like you're proud of it? You're ashamed of it? Like,
no. We were talking about the fact that my mom wouldn't let me shave the hair off of my arms because it was a lot.
Oh, no.
And she told me that, and she said, look at my arm. She goes, see all that hair? I'm going to shave it off. She was like, otherwise it's going to stay and it's going to grow. And I was like, yeah, I know. I'm looking at mine like, this is horrible. That was our conversation. And then we were like talking about them playing basketball, but our main conversation was about girl stuff. Like my hair on my arm is too long and my mom won't let me shave it.
Wow. Did Alyssa have any?
We've used to see each other a lot in the 80s, because back in the 80s, they used to have like, if you were on like sitcoms and stuff, they had like little mini parties for everybody who was on a different show. And it would be like, you know how you see industry nights for adults and they go out and they all hang out at a club after something, or for a certain time of year, you would see celebrities going. Well, this one, it was all the kids who were on TV shows playing someone's kid or whatever. You have your own industry night where you would go. And those were really fun because they had a DJ for us. We had food. We had all kinds of stuff and we could dance the whole night and just like hang out. So that was really fun. And we would see each other often. And we kind of remember each other because we loved dancing. And, you know, back in the 80s, those dances looked so good.
Yeah, they were something.
Yeah. I was all about those. So, yeah.
Now, when you got these chances to mingle with the other child actors and everything, did you build any relationships where you really kept in contact with those people, or it helped you get into different spheres for you to express more creative work?
I wish I would have kept in contact with most of them for a longer period of time, but in the industry, it's really hard because if everybody's working, you're working for the time that you're either on the episode or whatever, or the movie, or however long the shooting is for, and then it's like it's over. So, and most of the time, people aren't going to keep in touch. You just kind of run into each other again, either on another project or working next to each other on a project. But yeah, what was your other part of the question?
Well, I was just wondering if you built any connections that helped you get into any other creative spaces by going to these parties and stuff.
No, because those were all just kids. Like, the adults were there to monitor stuff at those parties, but we were literally there to just dance, crack jokes, and like hang out and have fun, because you're always on the set. You have to be quiet. You have to go to your school. You have to do whatever. You have to do all this stuff. And that was our one night where we could just be teenagers, be preteens, and just hang out. A lot, like I said, a lot of the people that I worked with, I either saw them again on other stuff or on the lots, or I just didn't see them at all. But I have met a lot of people, which I like, which is good to say you have those experiences with meeting those people. Because mostly with everyone, you leave with something. Everybody, when they talk to somebody, you either leave with your own judgments or whatever it is. But for those experiences, I met people and our conversations were always really good. Like, I remember me and I was on Silver Spoons playing Alfonso Ribeiro's girlfriend. And what's her face was on there. I cannot think of her name either. That episode is actually online. Christina Applegate. I didn't even have to
tag. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So she was on that episode and we ended up talking about the Beatles. And she, when we were talking, said she loved the Beatles. And I was like, I don't really know any of their songs. Fast forward to like 7 years ago, I'm like, I love me some Beatles, but I didn't know any songs back then. So I was like, no, I never. And we talked about that, and we talked about like spirituality, and that's what I remember from working with her. She's very nice, but we had really cool conversations. Being
did like, you have to French kiss Alfonso Ribeiro too, or did you get a pass?
Nope.
Did you have any conversations with him off stage, or just any friendship, anything like that? Or
no, that was just, I went and did my part and that was it. Yeah, that was, it's normal. Like I said, sometimes you just go there, you do the role that you're there for. And then when you wrap, you wrap. And it's part of how it works. And then you might see that person again later, but you may not.
Did Silver Spoons and Different Strokes, did they also tape in the Warner Brothers lot, like Family Matters in Burbank, or no?
Family Matters taped in Culver City. We did, I believe it was at the Burbank Studios here, like in Burbank, the Burbank Studios, they're called the Burbank Studios, but it was really like NBC Studios back then.
Right.
So that's where I would tape. And then there was the Warner Brothers lot also.
Okay.
Like Universal. But yeah, those, and I used to love, I don't know why the memory of driving up to the lots always made me happy, but it did. Just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know why, but. Every time you drove into the lot, you have to go through security. I was like, I'm at home. Every single time. So, yeah.
Can you tell us some of the other sets, TV shows, film productions that you witnessed while you were on the lot?
For the show that I was in, Bustin' Loose, we had A Different World filming next to us. So I got to see Lisa Bonet and Lenny Kravitz when they were together. Lenny Kravitz was playing basketball with Kadeem Hardison and some others on the lot. So I saw them. Charles and Charles would shoot right next door to our stage. So we would see Scott Baio and the other cast members often. Small Wonder used to tape over there for us. They taped over there a little bit. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of different shows. That was the Warner Brothers lot. So you would see a lot of different stuff, like a lot of different shows.
Yeah. I think that Family Matters maybe initially taped in Culver City, but then later was at Warner Brothers, because I know we
probably talked yes. Yep.
Yeah.
After Jamie was gone, I think.
Yeah.
But I used to have to drive to Culver City.
Got it.
When you were on the set, and was there any like experiences that you've had, like that just, I would say, is like a story that maybe no one's ever heard, but it's been something that was so exciting for you that you just have held on to?
I think when I was, if I'm going to say something to answer that question, it would be probably on the, I actually did, it's not really a secret. I just don't really, some of my close friends know. But I was doing vocals with a group I can't remember, but it was around the time The Lion King was out, and they made a huge album. These men came from Africa and they brought their choir. It was amazing. And I got to sing with them for the show. And Morgan Freeman actually introduced everybody. So I was like, I got to meet Morgan Freeman. That's Lean on Me. Like, I was so excited. I was like,
yeah.
And then we sang and I went backstage for a hot second and there was Bonnie Raitt. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Bonnie Raitt is and my mom already knew. My mom already knew. She was like, okay, I'm going to go say something because she already knew how much I
loved. Was this, sorry, was this before, God, that it was my favorite breakup song. What's that song that she does?
Oh, I Can't Make You Love Me. That's the one I would sing, the Prince song that she sang. Well, Prince sang it.
Was this before the song mm-hmm. came out or after or during?
After. That's why I, that's how I was introduced to her and all of her music was through that song. So this was after. And so when I saw her, I was like, my mom was like, I have to go say something. She's like, my daughter has sang your song so many times in my house. And she's over there freaking out. And I was like, hello. And she was just so sweet and so nice. And she encouraged me to learn the guitar. She was like, if you really want to learn it, just do it. She's like, you can do it. And she's like, so I expect to hear something.
How did that turn out?
I love it. I haven't played in a while and it's going to hurt when I start again, because that's what happens if you stop. Good luck to your calluses. So I'm like, ooh, I got a good month and a half before I build them back up again. But I love it. When I was in the metal band, I played rhythm guitar, so I would do that. But I taught myself. I didn't go to really any classes. With my electric guitar, I would listen to Pantera, which is one of my favorite metal bands. It's my number one all-time favorite. And Dimebag Darrell was my favorite guitar player, and he still is. And he was my guitar teacher on my CD player. So I would just play his stuff over and over again and figure out where on the fretboard I was supposed to be.
And that worked out.
I'd make myself do it over. And then I'd go to the next song, and I'd be like, what is he doing here? Got it. That's how I taught myself.
Did you have pretty worn out calluses teaching yourself during that time? Or?
Yes. Oh, no. I ended up getting a really thick callus on the tip of my fingers. And my mom, she's so girly. She was like, oh, she's like, let me feel. That's not lady hands. I was like, I don't care. She's like,
yeah.
She knew she could get me if she would say stuff like, I don't know if your husband one day is going to like that.
And oh, I'd my be God.
Like, I'm not getting rid of them. I'm not doing it. Because I know for her, she was like, why are they so thick? Because they were like, I was proud of them because I could just play whatever I wanted now and I don't feel a thing. But she was always like, no. And mine don't peel off like other people's like will peel. Mine will just go back to being soft. Like it'll be really stiff. And then all of a sudden, like after a month, it'll be like gone.
I just have one last question for you on my end here. And it has to do with everything that you've talked about, everything you've done, your music, animation, the things that you've been a part of. What have you discovered about yourself through this journey of just creativity over your life?
That I have no reason to fear who I actually am. And that moving forward, I can't. Because even though I love my craft and I love being creative, somewhere inside of me, I knew I'd do my job good, but I'm like, you know, I can be hard on myself like most people can. And I'm like a double torso, so I can be stubborn too. So I feel like I can execute something, or I was back then. I could execute a role. I could execute my album. I could do the stuff that I need to because that's my craft. That's who I am. I could do it. But you can't do that and then sit on the side and be afraid of the power that you have utilizing all of those. I think my personality was more, like I said, nice to a fault. You ever been around people where you tell them what you do? I never tell anybody anything because I act like a ninja because I've seen this happen, but it's happened to me once or twice. And then I said, never again. You ever seen when you try to tell people what you're going to do and they look at you like you just cussed them out? Like they're highly offended.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you?
Yep.
And you're not even being conceited. You're just like, this is what I'm going to do. But it's construed as, oh, you're arrogant. And I'm far from that. So for me, it was like, I don't want to step into who I actually know I am for fear of one, failure, two, success, and three, what are people going to think? Like, are they going to look at me like I think I'm this arrogant person? But I've learned from that place where I was during all of these things that I've done with all of these wonderful, talented people, there still was that. And now I'm at this space in my life where I'm like, this is who I am. If my light's too bright, get some shades, baby. I'm not going to dim it. And I'm not going to, I'll never change who I'm going to be because I'm working on something over here, something went really successful. At the end of the day, I'm still a daughter of the divine. I have responsibilities here. I have to be responsible for the way that I treat and interact with people, but also how I treat and interact with myself. And I've learned from all of that stuff that if it's in me, I'm supposed to bring it out. If somebody, yeah. if somebody feels some type of way, then that's the healing process they have to do. But I had to get ugly with it and go through my healing process to realize there's nothing wrong with being able to teach yourself how to play the instruments you want to learn how to play. I went to school and played an instrument. I played the saxophone, and I could play it again if I want to, but I don't want to right now. My dad plays the saxophone, but there's no reason why I can't just say that and be like, oh, well, she plays instrument. I do. I play music. I love music. I write scripts. I write stories. I have a kids channel. I nanny when I'm not doing entertainment stuff, and I help take care of babies, but I only take care of the babies that are sent for me. And that may sound crazy, but I do. I literally said my prayer is like the children that need the person that I am. Those are the ones that I want to help. And they're babies. They're all babies, and they're sweet, and they're wonderful. And those babies chose me to do that. So I'm confident in that. I don't care what anybody else says. Yes, I still do my acting and my singing and all of that. But this time it's going to be the actual whole authentic package. Mm-hmm. And if it makes people go, doesn't make sense. Well, maybe you're not supposed to listen to it. I don't know.
Well, where can we find you to find this authentic package that you speak of, Tyron?
Well, the song, singular, I'm hoping to have done before my birthday, which is in May. So I'm hoping to have it done in April. Mm-hmm. But if not, because I was thinking what could make it more sentimental, I could put it out on my birthday.
Which is when?
May 14th.
So. Oh, that's my cousin Andy's birthday. Look at that.
Okay. Oh, see? Taurus gang gang. Okay. But, yeah. So I'm on Instagram at official Tyron Perry. Mm-hmm. And I am on Spotify, but it's my album from when I was 15. So if you go on Spotify and you type in Tyron Perry, you can hear that album.
And this is, I'm sorry, this is like the R&B album that you spoke of, or is this something
that's
different?
That's the pop one. That's the pop on Columbia, the pop R&B album on Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Listening to that.
That one's on Spotify. And yeah, my children's YouTube channel doesn't have much on it at all, so I'm not going to give that yet, but I will let you guys know. Still working on more episodes, and that's it. I think that's where you can reach me. I do have a YouTube. If you type it in, you'll find me there.
Okay.
If you type in Tyron Perry, you will find there are videos there. And yeah, that's pretty much where you can find me, and you guys can hold me accountable because I told you what I'm working on. You can always send me a DM and be like, did you finish?
I'm going to hold you accountable for those She Show podcast episodes.
That's what I just said.
Yes.
Okay.
Do it. And I'm going to tell my sister tonight, I'm going to be like, hey, I'm getting ready to be held accountable if you don't do these episodes.
Yeah. Pass on this message to Jania and Jamie, John and Andrew.
I always get the emails from people like, when's the next episode? And I'm like, you guys, if we have to lock in a time, but we're all like all over the place. And it's like, we have to lock in the time.
Please, we are waiting for it. We're waiting for it. After the Dahmer episode, I was like, okay, I need this in my life now.
Okay. I'm going to tell her that too. Like, you make it happen. I got some days off coming up.
There you go.
Because we have an episode. I think we have one episode that's ready. I don't know if it's edited. I did tell her because it was a couple weeks ago. I said, somebody emailed me about the episode. She's like, I'm on it. So it's like, we don't have anybody doing this for us. We do it ourselves. You know how it works. So it's just like, yeah. So, but please send me the email because I'm going to screenshot it or the DM and I'm going to tell her. Look.
Every day I'm going to email you about this podcast.
Do it.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me on. This was really fun. This was great.
Have a great night.
You too.
Thank you, Tyron. Have a great night.
Thank you.
How was that?
That was fun. Oh my gosh. I was so like incredibly nervous in the beginning. I was like, oh, this is such a clunky start for me, but I had fun.
No. I mean, I think you did a fantastic job. And I mean, we're talking to someone who has quite an experience in the industry. She's the sister of Jamie Foxworth, our wonderful Judy Winslow. So I totally agree, becoming nervous and wondering what it's going to be like. But yeah, she couldn't be more of a sweet person. God, the animated energy coming from her. I love, love, love those people that just, like, she reminds me of like every quirky theater person I used to hang around with when I did theater back in high school and college, where it's like, you're so fucking weird and funny. I love you. I want to hug you forever.
That's exactly my high school experience too. I'm like, oh my gosh, do you feel like I'm sitting one next to one of my band geeks and we're just geeking out together? This was fun.
Yeah. So she was as great as I wanted her to be. At Family Matters Rewatch Pod, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. Although, to be honest, we're going to be relaunching soon, so it'll be different. But for now, as of this recording, you could find us there. And the deliciousrecap at gmail.com if you ever want to just send us questions, comments, concerns, feedback, all that good stuff. And I think that's it.
Okay. So as I am sitting here fangirling, because I have just had a fangirl moment this whole past hour, let's just let this deliciousness ring.